This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
One man who's found himself very much in the middle of religious freedom debate is Peter Weeks. Peter is a Uniting Church minister. Peter was the first Uniting Church minister to conduct a same-sex marriage and is, in fact, he's getting married later this year to his male partner. Peter's got a unique view of this recent debate, caught as he's in the middle of it. We began by asking Peter about the process of building support for same-sex marriage within his church.
It's been a long journey. But specifically, the last 6 years, well, 7 years now, our National Assembly is the body that makes these decisions, and that's made up of representatives of churches from all across the country. Two assemblies ago, so 7 years ago now, it was agreed to begin a conversation process looking at the question of what is it that we understand as marriage, and is it possible for our understanding of marriage to be widened to include people of same gender? Mm-hmm. The language of same gender was used deliberately because for some of the communities within the Uniting Church, to use the word sex kind of implies something else. Mm-hmm. So while most of the community would talk about same-sex marriage, we deliberately referred to it as same-gender marriage. Mm-hmm. That conversation took place across the church for 3 years, and the group reported back to the next assembly, and it was agreed that further work needed to be done, and so it was sent back to the group to work on it for the next 3 years. And at the assembly last year, a major report was presented, which moved us towards opening the concept of marriage to be between two people. Mm-hmm. The decision that was finally made was not exactly the one that was proposed. The proposal would have been simply to change our definition of marriage, which had been formalised in 97, to be between two people. Mm-hmm. There are a significant number of people within the church for whom that was a step too far. Over the course of a week of the meeting, we talked about this every day for 6 days, and in the end came up with the position acknowledging that in the church we in fact have two understandings of marriage. There are those for whom marriage can only be between men and women, and there are those who are prepared to say marriages between two people. And so those two definitions are held now officially side by side as the positions of the church, which gives individual ministers the freedom to celebrate marriages according to whichever definition they are comfortable with. And local churches also, local church council, which is responsible for what happens on the property, also have the ability to, or the necessity to decide whether or not the local church property can be used for same-sex marriages.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that there is nonetheless ongoing division within the Uniting Church about its position. There are conservatives who would like to return to the position whereby nobody within
the church. That's right. Unfortunately, there is a section of the church that aren't comfortable with being allowed to continue to practice marriage and teach marriage according to their understanding without it being the understanding of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a safe way of saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, but you've actually run a same-sex wedding. What was it like?
Oh, it was It was great. It was actually in a garden in the couple's home, but one of the brides, two women, was in fact the daughter of a member of our congregation, which, to be clear, for most weddings, there's very little connection with the local congregation. They just happen to live locally and decide they want to have the wedding at the church or have me as, have the minister do the wedding somewhere. But this case, it was the daughter of one of our church members. And it was, yeah, it was a very joyous occasion. It gave me an opportunity to remind people that our understanding of the gospel is good news, and it's good news for a lot of people in a lot of ways that may not have been thought of before.
Yeah, and so have you gone on a journey in terms of your view on same-sex marriage?
Yes, I think early on when it first started being discussed, 20 years ago, when it was sort of floating around, I was uncomfortable with the idea. I still had a fairly traditional view, not a traditional view of marriage in its entirety. I believed in what we'd call equality in marriage. But at that stage, in my thinking, the term marriage simply referred to man and woman. Since then, that has developed over time, partly through my own journey and my own coming out. I'm getting married in October.
Right, congratulations.
Yeah,
right.
And that'll also be a Uniting Church wedding.
Right, to
a man.
Right, yes. Okay, sure.
So, within 13 months, I will have conducted two same-sex weddings and been married myself.
That's pretty good. That is quite good. I guess I'm interested in how people get to changing their minds on these kinds of issues, because it seems like the debate that is happening in Australia, and I think this is true of the debate in the UK and the United States as well, is in a lot of ways not an honest debate, partly because many of the leaders on the religious side, I don't think are making an effort to represent the actual points of view of most religious people. And by that, like a group like the Australian Christian Lobby here in Australia, yeah. I just think a lot of the things that Lyle Shelton says are clearly out of sync with what most Christians that I know, and I think certainly the overwhelming majority of people in Australia, think about these kinds of issues. So I'm kind of actually interested in how people go about changing their minds and thinking about this kind of stuff.
It's a tricky one. And within the Uniting Church, our leadership has always been open, if you like. Not necessarily always on the same page, but because of the way our leadership operates, we have a more open to discussion, and all our decision making is done by consensus. So the church membership is involved in lots of ways through these conversations and discussions. Those of us who've had the advantage of some theological education, and that's not just in the formal sense, but even in local church context and people's readings and things, and other forms of education, are open to exploring different ideas. They may not necessarily go down a particular path, but there is an openness to thinking about things and exploring things. There are some others who are less open to anything that's outside of the framework that they started in. And I mentioned my position has changed. I wasn't hard and fast on anything at the time. It was just my understanding was that marriage was between a male and woman, and legally that's all it could have been at the time. I was open to how we might celebrate and acknowledge relationships. But as the processes went on and the conversations of the last 20, 30 years have gone on, because we've been discussing the question of sexuality in the church for 30-something years in different ways, starting with whether or not, at the time we would have only been talking about gay and lesbian people, but it's more than that now, but what their place is in the church, mm-hmm. as members of the church. Mm-hmm. And we have definitely stated right from the mid-80s that one's sexuality is not a bar to membership in the church. And even that far back, we also said it's also not a bar to leadership in the church. Mm-hmm. That what you do with it may be, but your actual sexuality isn't a bar. Mm-hmm. It's taken us a while for that to become more of a reality, but certainly it's definitely a reality within the life of the church now. Was an issue.
Do you think it's fair to say that on certain kinds of issues, the contributions of people who are Christian are welcomed when it comes to issues of gender and sexuality, whereas they are not welcomed when, say, Christian leaders insert themselves into the refugee debate or the debates around homelessness?
Yeah, I think at a political level, I think that's probably true. It's interesting. It tends to only be one side of the Christian view about issues of gender and sexuality that get the political recognition. Mm-hmm. those of us who were on another side of that debate feel our voices are not necessarily being heard. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and it is very frustrating when you get small organisations with lots of influence, mm-hmm. that only push a particular kind of agenda that seems to only have one or two very narrow strands, mm-hmm. to it. If their agenda included a much wider section, and I great disagreement with the Catholic Church on a lot of its teachings and things that it promotes. But I also recognise that the Catholic Church also has a very strong social justice awareness and, mm-hmm. and advocacy in a whole lot of other areas that I would support.
Yeah.
So whereas somebody like the ACL, I don't think I've ever seen anything that they've pronounced on that I could sign up to.
Yeah. Well, that's quite interesting, given you are literally a Christian leader, basically.
Yes.
And I think the overwhelming majority, there was a survey done of all of their media releases and everything they've been publicly quoted on, and the overwhelming majority of them related to sexuality and gender. You were talking before about the fact that you feel like your voice isn't heard as much. What would you say with that voice on these kinds of issues?
Well, I would want it to be known that a valid Christian view of sexuality and gender includes an openness and an inclusiveness of LGBTIQ people within the community and within the church, that the question of gender isn't as simple or black and white as some would say, that there are many variations, some of which are known, some of which are unknown, and to those of us who are not directly affected, perhaps mystifying, mm-hmm. But that as human beings, that's where we start off. As we're all human beings to start with, mm. The ideas of treating people with respect, regardless of who they are, and that's a test for all of us. And I mean, there is a saying, you know, respect is earned. It doesn't automatically come, and I accept that. There was a time where ministers were meant to be automatically respected simply because we were ministers. Mm-hmm. And we know where that's led.
Yeah.
Yes, and absolutely. That's led in some very dangerous areas. So the question of respect for human beings is one thing. The automatic respect of a position simply because somebody's in that position, that there always needs to be a healthy openness and questioning.
Yeah, and it's interesting, though, that, like you were saying, as the authority, and I think it's true of a number of institutions, but it's particularly true of the churches, in particular the Catholic Church, in terms of how much its authority has fallen away. I think there are some people who lament that change in a lot of ways. They feel like society is, there is less respect, it's more fragmented. What do you think of?
Yeah, I think one of the things we're confusing ourselves. We're confused people. We want leadership in all sorts of areas, by which we think we mean we want somebody to tell us what's acceptable and what's not. But then down the track, we suddenly think, well, that's not leadership, because that's leading somewhere other than where I want to go or want to be. We certainly face this in the Uniting Church quite a lot, where we, because of our consensus approach and non-hierarchical structure, we sometimes get people lamenting that and saying, "Yeah, we want strong leadership. But usually what they mean is we want somebody to lead us in the way we want to go.
Absolutely,
and that happens across the board in all sorts of areas. And in where you've got a structure that actually builds that in, there are risks, obviously. It makes some life a lot simpler, but it makes other parts of life dodgy, risky.
Much less just.
Yeah.
Do you mind me asking, how did you find coming out within the church?
Actually, it was, I was very well supported. I was in Tasmania. There were difficulties in, and I won't name them, but within the congregation that I was minister of, because I'd only been there for less than a year when it had happened. And when I was called there, I went with a wife. I'd already come out within the family, and that's another story. But that it was during that year there that it was decided that, you know, we would be better served by going our separate ways. And then, yeah, there was a mixed reaction within the congregation to the news, and there were some who were quite okay. There were some who felt that, yeah, they were comfortable with a gay minister as long as he was celibate. And there were others who just were not comfortable at all. And I ended up resigning from there so that I could give them a clear go, and I could reconsider where I am. But through all of that, the sort of the church officials and those responsible for my care and direction, if you like, it's the wrong word probably, couldn't have been more supportive.
That was Uniting Church Minister Peter Weeks speaking with Toby Halligan.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.